This is the verse for the week. It comes out of John chapter 10. We're reading John chapter 10, 11, and 12 this week, which means we're finishing up the last three and a half years of Jesus' life. John 1 to 12 is 3.5 years. John 13 to 21 is 3.5 days. So we're finishing up this week the long ministry. John 1 through 12, which is 11, he raises Lazarus, and 12, Mary comes and anoints him for burial. That's 3.5 years. And then from chapter 13 is where he's washing the disciples' feet in the upper room. 14 is where he's talking. 14, 15, and 16 is where he's talking to them. 17 is where he's in the Garden of Gethsemane and talking to them right after he left the upper room. 17 is where he's in the Garden of Gethsemane praying the high priestly prayer. 18, 19 are the arrest and crucifixion. 20 is the resurrection. 21 is the day where he, after the resurrection, where he goes with the men. That's the half day. So you have 3.5 days and 3.5 years. So it's kind of neat how John did that up. He's not like Luke, who's doing it very historically. He's much more like Matthew in the sense that he's showing who Jesus is and showing the opposition to Jesus. Because the reason for that is he's not just coming with propaganda. He's showing that in Jesus' situation, there was this antagonism. There was this battle that was going on. Ultimately, the authorities got him through their swindling and working certain things. They got him crucified. And they want to show that he's, you know, and that was not what you would usually show for somebody. You want to show the good things about him. You don't want to show all the rough stuff they had to encounter. But John gives us all that. So anyway, Jesus says in John chapter, and this is the great Good Shepherd chapter. He says, I'm the Good Shepherd. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I'm the Good Shepherd comes from verse 14, and the other comes from verse 27. But I thought the 27 looked kind of funny if we didn't have 14. So that's why I sort of divided out there with the ellipsis. So that's kind of neat. You notice they follow. And that's the concept. We follow where he leads us. Too many times we want to go out front and have him follow up. You know, so that he can help us. So where we make decisions and then say, Lord, would you bless my decisions? Rather than saying to the Lord, what would you like for me to do? I've been that way, have you? We need to be where we say, Lord, where do you want to go? I want to follow you where you lead me. So today I'd like to just share with you about the Good Shepherd. And it comes from this passage in John. Maybe you turn there with me. John chapter 10. And I'd just like to read to you this section of Scripture down to verse 21. John chapter 10. Do you remember what happened in John chapter 9? No, that's John chapter 8. He healed the blind man. And so, in chapter 8, there's this lady who's committed adultery that he deals with. And in fact, in chapter 7, he deals with some authorities who are coming and quizzing him about what he's saying to them. And then in chapter 8, because of that, they bring him this woman who's caught in adultery. I mean, why did they bring her to him? Because they're wanting to catch Jesus. They're wanting to trip him up. Because they know that if he says, let her go, they're going to say, well, then you're against Moses' laws. If they say, stone her, then he's going to have to deal with the Roman authorities because they didn't in that day have the right to do public executions. They had to go through the Roman officials to be able to do that. So they had him either way, and they were wanting to just get him messed up. Well, in chapter 9, he goes and there's this guy who's been blind from the time he was born. And Jesus, you remember what he does? Goes up to him, puts some mud on his eyes, and tells him to go wash in a pool. Remember that? So he's got to make his way through town. He's done it before because he's blind. He knows how to get around. He's like Rainey and Ryan, you know, the folks that were with us for a while who were blind. And Rainey, you'd run into Rainey anywhere in Greensboro. You just go out and she's there because she learned how to get around. Well, this guy learned how to get around. But he's blind and Jesus comes up and gives him sight. And you know what the religious leaders do? They're all over him. They're not happy and rejoicing that he can see. They're all over him about this man, Jesus. And in fact, they're so upset about what Jesus did and this guy won't talk about Jesus in bad ways, that they kick him out of the synagogue. They excommunicate. And Jesus finds out about it and goes to him and reveals himself to him as Messiah. And now, you've got to understand, when you come to chapter 10, that's just happened. Okay? If you read chapter 10 without reading 9, it won't make a lot of sense. There'll be things you don't understand. So, having understood that, now let's go to chapter 10. And follow with me as I start reading, and we'll start in verse 1. Well, I tell you what, let me start in verse 35 of chapter 9, because then you get the flow of what's taking place. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he found him, he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" And he answered and said, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" And Jesus said to him, "You have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you." And he said, "Lord, I believe." And then he did something no Jewish person would ever do to a human being. He worshipped him. How do we know that Jesus is God? People say to me, I've heard some people that don't believe in the scriptures, "Jesus never claimed to be God." You know what he's doing right here? He's receiving the worship of this man. You don't do that. Angels didn't do that. In Revelation, there's this angel, and after John has been shown all these things that are to come, John falls down at the angel's feet to worship him. And the angel says, "Don't do that. Get up. I'm a fellow servant of God like you are." If you're not God, you don't take this. And so Jesus accepted worship. Now then, verse 39. And Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may be made blind." Then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, "Are we blind also?" And Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, 'We see,' therefore your sin remains." And he's coming against them. You know, if they don't recognize he is Messiah, that's a sin. Because all the things have been shown to them that he is. Then he starts in verse 10. "Most assuredly I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he who enters the door of the sheep, is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." Jesus used this illustration, "But they did not understand the things which he spoke to them." Then Jesus said to them again, "Most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. And whoever came before me are thieves and robbers. But the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal, to kill, and to destroy. I have come that they may have life, and that they may have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But a hireling, he who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, when he sees the wolf coming, leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I am known, and I know my sheep, and am known by my own. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. Therefore my Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have the power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment I have received from my Father." Therefore, there was a division among the Jews because of these sayings. And many said, "He has a demon and is mad. Why do you listen to him?" Others said, "These are not the words of one who has a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" Division is part of the situation around Jesus, where some people believed, many people didn't. But he calls himself the Good Shepherd, and by that he lets us know that we're the sheep, right? Say bye. You're a sheep. Now, what does it mean to be a sheep? Well, there are several things that we know about sheep from the Scriptures. The first is, sheep are prone to wander. That's a big problem with them, isn't it? They wander away. They don't know, they just don't recognize the danger and they just wander their way. Isaiah spoke about this in Isaiah 53, a great passage we know. "All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all." Everybody's done that. We've gone our own way. No, I don't want to listen to God's way. I want to go my own way. And that happens. It happens to people who are Christians today in our society. They just decide they want to go the way of the society. They want to follow them rather than follow what God says. And, that's what they want to do. The problem is they'll come to cliffs and they'll think that because everybody else is jumping off the cliff, they ought to too. And sheep are so stupid, they just follow. And they do it. And I have a picture. I had a picture at the house of on my computer of a pile of sheep at the bottom of a cliff where one had just started and they'd all fallen off the cliff and they'd all jumped off the cliff and they all died. Broke their necks. The fall was too great. Why would they do all that? Well, it's because they can wander and don't make a lot of sense. And Peter, he writes in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 25, "For you are like sheep gone astray, but you've returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls." And I was a sheep who was astray. But thank the Lord, he came and rescued me out of that, and I've returned. Sheep are clean animals. They're for sacrifice. You remember when Noah got on the ark? He took two of everything except when he got to the sheep. Remember, he took seven of those? The clean animals, he took seven because they were sacrificial animals. And we are to be a sacrificial animal. A sacrificial person before the Lord. That's how we are sheep. And in that setting, the Lord said through Paul, "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service." We're to be people who offer ourselves to the Lord. Sheep produce lambs, milk, and wool. In our thinking, we think that sheep are used, and you can go into a store and buy sheep, right? Buy lamb for meat. In fact, in Europe, that's why they raised the sheep for meat. I'm going to tell you something. In Jesus' day, they rarely ate lamb. The only time they really ate lamb was at Passover, because it was commemorating the Passover lamb, and then they would take one lamb for usually several families. But the reason they didn't kill the sheep and eat them is because it was their money maker. They have more sheep, and the more sheep you have, the more money you're going to have. Because what they would do is they'd take the wool and they'd shear them and they'd sell the wool. And that was what their money was from. That was their cash crop, if it were, from the husbandry and the things. They would have the wool. And so if you had a sheep that had little ones, that was marvelous. Because you just increase, and the shepherds were very, very careful with their sheep, the ones who owned them. I mean, this was like what you do when you take care of your business or take care of your car, or take care, you would take very much care. They would take so much care of their sheep that when they would come together with other people, the people would ask them this question. This would be the first question. "How your sheep doing?" Then they would say, "How your children doing?" Then finally they'd say, "How's your wife?" And the reason is because it was so important in their society, sheep having it. And so we are used by the Lord. He gives us gifts so that we might, through His grace, dispense those gifts to others. We're sheep, and we're to be used by the Lord that way. And sheep need help. Sheep need help. You see, they can grow a lot of wool. Look at this picture. That's an amazing picture, isn't it? And they can grow so much wool that they can have major troubles. Philip Keller, who was a shepherd in Australia, wrote a book on the Lord, on Psalm 23. And in Psalm 23, there's this phrase that says, "He restores," can you finish it?
"My soul."
"My soul." And the reason the shepherd has to do that is because of what can happen to the sheep. They get like this, and they get so heavy with wool that they can cast. The sheep is called casting. And it's where they go down to rest, and they can't get back up. And so they roll around trying to get back up, and they do, and they go back over on their back, and they can't get free. And they're there, and they will die if somebody doesn't help them. One of my cohorts, who's a pastor in Wheaton, Illinois, had two members of his congregation, two doctors, who went with their wives over to Ireland. And one of their island, they went on the back roads around just seeing the countryside. It was great. And they came upon a herd of sheep. Nobody was around. It was in the fenced area. And nobody was around. But there was one sheep that looked like this. It was on its back with its legs up. And they thought, well, it must have died. But as they kept looking, they saw that its legs were moving. And so they were both doctors. So they stopped the car and they went out and went over to the sheep, took a picture of it. And then after they took a picture, they righted the sheep. And then the sheep was very wobbly, and once it got up, because it had been trying for a long time, it had been really having trouble. And so one of the doctors went and just started rubbing its legs and trying to get blood flow back into it. And finally the sheep got to where it could stand without wobbling and looked at him. It gave a nice, "Bah, thank you," and then it headed off to the rest of the flock. But you see, it can cast. It can get in a situation where, if it doesn't have help, it will die. Guess what? We're like sheep. Spiritually, we can get into situations that will wipe us out if we don't stay close to the Master. Well, you know the Psalm 23, the great psalm about that David wrote about the Lord being the shepherd. Why don't you say it with me, okay? "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for You are with me. Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Well, that's a great psalm, isn't it? We've known that for a long, long time. And as I read through the things of the psalm, I read it a couple of weeks ago, and as I was reading it, I was also reading another book where D.L. Moody, as he was dying, he said two things that just really caught my attention, because they recorded. He was the originator of the Moody Bible Institute and pastor of Moody Church. And they recorded what he was saying. One of the things he said was, "If this is death, it's sweet." We don't hear that much, do we? It's sweet. And the other thing he said was, "There's no valley." You know what the valley's for? We go through the valleys here. We go through the places that are dark and deep and scary here, and it's the rod and the staff of the Lord that comforts us while we're here. I used to think that was dying, but I don't think that's dying. I think that's living life here. And you understand about being cast, right? That's why we need our souls restored. That's why He's the only one who can do that. The other ones you pretty much understand. This psalm gives us the shepherd from the sheep's perspective. Right? Look at that. It's just talking about what the sheep experiences. Right? "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He leads me besides green pasture. He does this to me." Right? "Surely mercy and goodness and mercy shall follow" who? "Me all the days of my life." and I'll draw on the half-water. So it's from the sheep's perspective. When we get to John chapter 10, it's the shepherd from the shepherd's perspective. What's the shepherd like? Since God's our shepherd, what's he like? What does he do? And let's just look at a couple things. The first thing is, he comes to the sheep. Sheep don't go to him. He comes to sheep. It all begins with him. It started with him a long time ago in Genesis when man first sinned. God said, I'm going to create, somebody's going to come one day who's going to crush the head of the serpent. He'll be bruised, but, and that was the first indication God was going to do something. Then to Abraham he said, in you all the nations of the earth will be blessed. And in Jesus they all were. And Jesus the shepherd comes. And that's the first thing he did. And you notice here it says, he's in John chapter 10, as he's talking, he comes. Here's the second thing he does. He tells us he's the door for the sheep. They go in and out through him. We'll have to talk about that. And the last thing is he provides protection for a sheep. So let's look at these. But to do that, I have to help you understand what a sheepfold is. Because you and me are not farmers. And we don't understand a sheepfold. Do you understand a sheepfold? Let me explain it to you. In a sheepfold, when they're out with their sheep, they bring them into this rock, usually it was made of rock, formation, and they have a place. When it's bad weather, they'd erect a tent out there if they didn't have a facility, a building, and the sheep could get into that when it's bad weather, because you understand, they're basically in the same area where we are. It snows in Jerusalem. Did you know that? Many times we think that it's a much harder climate, but it's very much like our area here. And so they have snow in Jerusalem and in Galilee. And so they put up a tent and they have that. Some have a very elaborate thing. This is usually one. This is a sheepfold in a city where a number of shepherds would get together and they would build a rather large facility. And when they would come and bring their sheep back in, they would house them, and rather everybody having one, they would house them in this one facility. And they would hire somebody to be the watchman. Hire someone to watch over the sheep and to make sure nobody goes in who's not supposed to. But it was tall enough to where predators couldn't come in. It had a shelter, so if it was real bad weather, the animals could get out of the weather. And so it was kind of an interesting situation. I mean, here are pictures of ones that still exist from a long, 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 long time ago. And you can see it's just rocks that are up for the purposes of sheltering the sheep. And when Jesus says he's the door, we're going to talk about that. Many times if they're out, they would find a cave and they would put up rocks around the mouth of the cave, and then they would go to sleep right here at the edge of it, so that the sheep would have to climb over them to get out, and so that any predator would have to climb over them to get in. And they'd use their body as the gate. So that's a little bit of an understanding of it. Now let's go back in and take a look at the shepherd. See what it says here. He comes to the sheep, and he comes the proper way. You know, Jesus said, look in verse 1. He said, most assuredly I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. But he who enters the door is the shepherd of the sheep. Do you know how Jesus came? Yeah, he came. He came in a very special way. More special than anyone else who's ever been born. We have a lot of information about Jesus before he was born. Like, we know what town he's going to be born in. 600 years before he was born, you know what the prophet said? Bethlehem. You're going to be born in Bethlehem. We knew 600 years before he was born, he was going to be born to a young lady, and the word in the New Testament they use is virgin, young maiden in the Old Testament. But we know that it's a special thing, as Matthew puts back on the spin, helps us understand. It comes from the Isaiah passage. He was going to be born of a virgin. People knew that he had a special birth. You know, they accused his mom of having relations with somebody other than Joseph, because they called him an illegitimate child. They threw that in his teeth one time. So the news of his unique birth was known. That he would have a forerunner. The last prophet in the Old Testament tells about a forerunner who's going to come. Did Jesus have a forerunner? John the Baptist. Who got everybody's attention. There are over 100 different references to Jesus in the Old Testament that he fulfilled in his life. You can't do that. It is an astronomical figure of how the possibilities go. If you just took 8 different prophecies about a person's life before they were born, the chances of those being fulfilled in a person's life, just 8, would be the same number as if you took a land space the size of Texas, the state of Texas, and you put in that state of Texas silver dollars 2 feet high all throughout the land of Texas. And as you're doing that, you mark one with a red X and throw it into the mix, and it's all mixed up by bulldozers for 6 months. And then you get in a helicopter, and you have the helicopter fly, and you tell it where to stop, and you get out, and you reach your hand down, and the first coin you pick up is the one that you had the red X on. That'd be pretty remarkable, wouldn't it? That's the chance that there is that 8 prophecies would be filled in the life of one person before they're born. Jesus had many more than that. It's an amazing situation. He came the proper way. He wanted to make sure that people knew who he was. That's why God gave us all those prophecies. God wanted to make it clear to everybody, this is the one. Second, it says he had to speak to the gatekeeper, the doorkeeper. You know who that was, right? Who was the gatekeeper for Jesus? It was John the Baptist. He was the one who opened the door. He introduced Jesus, remember? Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. And so he was the one that they come in. Jesus is using this as a teaching time for the people. And then he says that he calls his sheep by name. Don't you like that? Again, you understand how important sheep were to the economy of the people in that day? The shepherds knew every one of their sheep, and they would give them names usually from the characteristics of the sheep. They had other names, but usually the characteristics of the sheep. So they had big nose, floppy ears, black feet. They'd name them whatever characteristic the sheep had. They don't have names quite like we do to our dogs today, but they had names more like the Indian names, you know? You know, Minnehaha, Running Bear, Smelly Feet, all the different Indian names that you had. And so they named the sheep that way. But the sheep got used to that name. I mean, you've got to understand, we don't have this in our day, but these shepherds would caress the sheep. They would hold the sheep. They're planning on that sheep producing wool for decades. 2 to 3 decades. They want to make sure that sheep is in good condition. So every day they would have their sheep and they would run their hands all over the sheep so that if there were ticks and other things, they would get those away from the sheep. They would care for these sheep. Jesus says, I call you by name. I don't know what he calls me. I mean, Daryl, I know is my name, but I wonder if he's got pet names for us. We'll find out when we get to heaven. Yeah. Maybe he'll call us by a special one. But he cares for his sheep. He calls them by name. That means he really knows them. He knows who they are, and he knows all about them. And he leads his sheep out. See, he went into this sheepfold called Judaism, and he's leading out his sheep. Judaism held these sheep for a good long time until he came. Now he's calling them out. He's bringing them out. And it says in verse 3, look what he says. And he calls the sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his sheep, he goes before them, and they follow him, and they know his voice. They will by no means follow the stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know his voice. Jesus gave this illustration. You know who the strangers were? You know who came before him? It were these teachers of the law. It was the Pharisees and Sadducees, these people who were putting extra burdens on the people that were difficult. Jesus said, they say, do one thing, but they don't do it. And he even, in Matthew, he even chastised them very strongly. He said, woe to you, hypocrites. Remember? He called them whitewashed sepulchers. On the outside, they talk one thing, but on the inside, they're just dead bones. And so he was very rough with them. These are the ones who he's calling the sheep out from. And so he gives that situation. So they hear his voice and they come out. So he's talking, first of all, to the Jewish community. But then he comes back at this, and look how he goes at this time. He starts talking about himself being the door. And he says in verse 7, and he said again, most assuredly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. The door of the sheep. What's the door? Well, it's the place that provides access. See, he's the place that provides salvation for them. Look at this great statement in chapter 10, verse 7. He says, I'm starting verse 8. All whoever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be, you know what the next word is?
Saved.
Let me say. Do you know how you get into salvation? Only through Jesus, only through the door. In the Old Testament days, there was a tabernacle. Do you remember the tabernacle? The tabernacle had a big fence around it made of cloth. And there was only one way you got in, and that was through the gate. You couldn't go in through the sides because it was closed off. There's no way. Only through the gate could you get in. And when you went in the gate, you know what the first thing you saw was a piece of furniture that they had there. It was an altar. And usually it was burning. Because it was burning for the with the sacrifice of people for their sins. And before you got to the holy place where God was, you had to go in through this particular way. There was no other way in. That's what Jesus is saying. He's the door. The only way. And He provides salvation. But not only salvation, because it says He leads them out and back in. Now when sheep go out, what are they going out to? To graze and to get something to drink, right? They go for the provisions that they need. They go by the still water and by the green pastures. And so the shepherd's job is to find those special things for them that will provide for their life. Guess what Jesus does? If He's really your shepherd, listen to this. If He's really your shepherd, He then takes upon Himself the responsibility of providing things for you for your provision so that you'll be provided for. What do you need? Well, if anything you need, He wants to provide that for you. The sad thing is most Christians haven't understood that. So therefore, they labor themselves very hard to try and make the provisions for themselves rather than coming to the Lord asking Him to do that and finding Him to be the one who can make the provision for them. The provision is so great that He said that by coming to me, you know what you get? You get abundant life. Abundant. Overflowing. Life. That doesn't mean you're going to have the greatest of everything that's out, the newest car, the most money. That does mean that God's going to take care of you and provide for everything that you need, and your life will be abundant. I've known a couple of rich people in my life. People who had so much money they didn't know what to do with it. I've only met a couple. But those people were the most unhappy people that I've met in life so far. Only the closest people I've met that were as unhappy with that were some homeless people who, after sleeping out in the freezing rain one night, were talking with me, and they were pretty pathetic, and they hated that situation. But I tell you what, these people who were had a lot of wealth, the guy didn't know if his wife loved him because of the money, because he got it the old-fashioned way, and he inherited it. Whether she loved him for the money, or whether she loved him for him, he was convinced his kids didn't love him for himself. He just loved him for what he could give them. And he was miserable. Totally miserable. He ended up taking his life because he was so miserable. Isn't that amazing? And he had more money than he could do anything with. It can't bring you happiness. Abundance doesn't bring you happiness. He had a big home, had a dozen cars. Money and things will not bring you happiness. The abundance Jesus gives will bring you happiness. It's great abundance. I have come that you might have life and have it abundantly. And He provides protection. Look at these last things that He says. In verse 11, He says this, I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd gives His life for the sheep. You know, in Psalm 23, He talks about all the things He does for us, but the greatest thing that the shepherd does for us, according to Him, is He gives His life for the sheep. Out where the shepherd would take the sheep, there would be a couple of things that could cause problems for the sheep. Really bad weather could cause trouble for the sheep. But more often, it would be predators of a four-legged kind. Because you had coyotes, and you had mountain lions, and you had bear. You remember David talked about to Saul how he had gone after a bear and a lion on two different occasions that had come to take the sheep. And they evidently didn't kill the sheep. They just wounded it enough to carry it off. And he dealt with that. But there were also other predators of the two-legged kind that caused troubles. Why would they come after the sheep? Well, usually they just want a meal. They wouldn't really care about the wool. They just want a meal. So they'd come and kill the animal and eat it. And the Lord says He protects us. He protects us today from the predators. The predators are always there wanting to get us. Satan makes sure of that. But the Lord's there to protect us. Not only that, but He also knows us by name. I love this one, 14 to 15, because He says, I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and am known to my own. And then He tells us the degree to which He knows us. Listen to what He says. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father. Do you think the Father in heaven and Jesus knew each other pretty well? I mean, their history went beyond the span of time, right? They knew each other extremely well. And Jesus says, the same way, I know you. There's a passage in this Old Testament that says, God knows your thoughts even before you speak them. I'm glad you don't know all my thoughts. I don't know that you want to have anything to do with me if you knew all my thoughts. You probably could say the same thing too about you, right? But God knows all your thoughts, knows everything about you. And He still wants to call you His sheep. That's called grace. But He loves His sheep. He loves us. And He says He's going to gather us. I guess out of my favorite section, out of the fact that He's going to die for us and provide us with protection by His death. The other thing that He says is this. Look at verse 16. And I really like this. He says to the Jewish people that are there, and other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. You know who the other sheep are? People who aren't Jewish. Aren't you glad He included us? I mean, here before He goes to the cross, He's including us. Other sheep I have are not of this fold. But I'll go, they'll hear my voice and I'll gather them, I'll bring them in. You know how you get to be a sheep?
Born.
Those of you are human? No? Well, yeah, that's true, but to use His analogies, you have to hear His voice. He's the one who does the speaking. You know? I mean, we many times are thinking that it's the person who's the one in control. But in reality, it's God who's speaking. And God saying, won't you come, won't you come? I remember God's voice in my heart, a little child. And I remember that night when I went to bed crying because I understood that Jesus went on the cross and died for me. I never understood it before. I was 6 years old. And it was Easter time, and I understood that at that point in juncture. And that night, the Spirit of God was calling to me in a six-year-old kid's heart. And I know His call. In fact, He's done that to everybody who's ever come to Him. He's called them. And so there are people listening to my voice today. Many of you have heard that call. It's great. But there are others who, you know, that call comes because there's a pressure on the inside. Because you're frustrated with the life that you're living. And you want to have God's life as part of your life. And His Holy Spirit will call you. It'll be soft and gentle. You can put it away by plugging in your earphones or putting on headphones and cutting on music, and you can push it away because God doesn't yell. He calls, pulls from your heart. I want you to come. It's quiet, small, but you know that pull. And usually there was some pressure, and I finally just said, Lord, I want you because of what you did for me. I didn't understand all that. When I was 15, I did that again. Because I didn't fully understand. I was 16, I guess. I didn't fully understand all that then as a little kid. 16-year-old understood better. I understand a whole lot better now. That He called me. So, I tell you what you need to do. You need to pray for your unsafe friends, family members, ones you don't know. And ask God to have His Spirit just call them. Because that'll be what they respond to. Ask God to put them in situations where they can hear Him call. You know? We're past ice storms now. Ice storms are great places for that because it cuts down all of your electronic equipment. You can't charge it real well, right? And you have quiet. And God speaks in the quiet to people's hearts. So I've been praying for a lot of my friends who don't know Jesus, that the shepherd would simply speak and call them, that they would come to Him and be saved. Well, that's what Jesus did. What are some things we can learn from the shepherd? Well, here's the first one. Jesus came so we'd recognize Him as the promised one. God made sure that anybody who wanted to investigate, they could find out that Jesus was the deal. Jesus was the one that was spoken of. Jesus is the one. He came the proper way. The second thing is that He calls people to gather them to His flock. So when you pray for your friends who don't know Jesus, just ask the Lord to speak into their heart. Ask God to call them that they might come. His sheep have His protection. You don't need to be scared. The sheep have the shepherd. The problem is that we can hear the roar of Satan through something. Maybe it's through watching the news cycle that continues 24 hours a day. And you see all the horrible stuff happening and you start to fear. And if you don't fear for you, you fear for your grandkids. Because we are people who can fear. That's where sheep are. Loud noise, sheep fear. Growling animal, they could be inside the sheepfold and they will crush one of their own. If an animal on the outside, a lion on the outside is roaring, they'll all bunch away from it and kill one of their own by just crushing it because they're such scaredy cats. Well, scaredy sheep. We tend to be the same way, can't we? Get so scared at stuff rather than understanding we have the protection of the shepherd. You don't have to be fearful. And we have the provisions of the shepherd. He takes it as His responsibility to provide for us the things that were in Psalm 23. That's His responsibility. He takes it on. He sees that as His responsibility to provide you with what you need to live. Provide you with what you need for life. He wants to provide that for you. And the life He wants to give you is abundant. And the last one is this. Don't wander from the shepherd. It's dangerous out there. Don't wander from Him. It's so easy to wander. You know how you do it? You get focused on work. And you get focused on what you got to do. And you just don't take time to see where He is. Another one of my professors was telling a story about one time when he was in Israel. And there was a flock of sheep and they were following the shepherd. But they came to this area where he had grazed them, and so they were grazing. And he got ready to leave, and so he hollers out at them and calls them by name. And they lift up their ears. He said, you can see it. Their ears just lift up, and they looked, and they went back to eating. And the shepherd started walking. And he kept walking. And finally, he was out of sight. He'd gone around the bend, out of sight of the sheep. And from that position, he gave out his call that he normally does. Because the sheep know his voice. Other people can do it. They don't listen to them. They listen to their shepherd because they know him. Remember, he's the one who rubs them every single night to check them. He knows all about them. He knows their personality. And he called out, and they knew his voice. And they looked and they couldn't see him. And in stampede style, they all rushed to where he was because they recognized that in that moment they were in danger because they couldn't see him. Don't wander from the shepherd. You can get fixed on your fears. You can get fixed on your work. You can get fixed on your family. You can get fixed on things that are not bad. It's not bad to graze. But if you let your vision move to where you're not seeing the shepherd, then you're opening yourself up to all kinds of danger. He's the good shepherd. He can't prove that any more than he has. He gave his life for the sheep. And then he took it back again. Nobody takes it from me. I lay it down and take it back up again. And he did that so that he might live every day with us. Isn't that great? He's a great shepherd. Well, let's pray. Lord, sometimes in our life we get busy on what we think is important. And our gaze switches from you to what we consider to be the things that we need in life and the things that are necessary in that time frame. Forgive us for being people who get our eye off the shepherd. And help us, Lord, by your grace, to be people who always follow you closely. Who don't make up our minds where we're going to go and ask you to bless it, but instead ask you where we're to go in the first place. By your grace, work in us, Lord, because we want to be obedient sheep. We want to be sheep that produce well for you in the world that you placed us in. Thank you for coming and dying for us. Thank you for taking your life again that you might live for us. And thank you for leaving a record for us that we might understand about your marvelous self. We praise you, Lord, in the name of Jesus, our Savior. Amen.